Yes, it's that time of the week where we talk all things pets and animals, and I'm joined by Cheryl Shaw and Dr. Kimberly Earle. Hello.
Hello.
Hello there.
Great to have you. Now, this is our second last one for the year.
Can you believe that?
I know.
That's crazy.
It's gone fast, hasn't it?
Yep.
Well, the listeners better get in quickly so that Kimberly can give them the answers before we shut down for our vacation.
That's right. That's right. Now, Cheryl, I was looking at your badge today and you've got a lovely gingerbread man.
Mm-hmm.
What's that got to do with animals?
Okay. So at the moment, we're all getting ready for Christmas. We're like 15 days out and we need to talk about safety around our pets at Christmas time. There's a lot of things that can go very wrong.
Ah, okay. So, and the gingerbread man, we all know what happened to him at the end. So yeah. We don't want that to happen to our pets.
That's it.
Yep. Excellent. And Kimberly, do you have anything yet?
Hopefully lots of phone calls. But I did want to make a few mentions about the New South Wales Pet Registry and making sure we're keeping up to date with that.
But in the meantime, we're going to talk about pet safety, I suppose, for Christmas, Cheryl.
Yeah, this is a crazy time of the year. And unfortunately, sometimes we let our guard down a little bit when it comes to our pets. But we need to be really mindful. Our homes get quite busy. They get busy with, bringing things in for the Christmas festivities, also with presents and trees. And you know what? Pets don't actually like change. They like routine. Most pets are really comfortable with how the house normally flows. So we need to be mindful when we've got all of this going on, particularly if you're going to have people staying with you, that you think about your pets. Now, in particular, cats. Cats will often go and hide and they're not going to be happy when you've got lots of people around, particularly if you've got kids running through the house and they're not used to that. So sometimes it's a really good idea to find a place that your cat likes. It might be the spare bedroom or even your bedroom, and close the door. Put the cat in there with a bowl of water and something nice and comfortable, but go and check regularly that the cat's doing okay, because they will become very stressed when the families are just not operating as they normally do. The other thing is, when you've got dogs, often people that don't have dogs at home aren't used to closing doors or closing gates. Now, this is where it can become a real disaster. If someone leaves a door open or, the gate open, the dog, and particularly if it's a puppy, is going to go out there and as an opportunist is going to run out that open door, open gate, and then danger can happen. So just being mindful that, you may need to put your dog or your puppy in a safe space as well, whether it be an area that you've closed off or, in a playpen or something that's nice and safe, because we just don't want an escape happening. Another thing is that when we're travelling, often people don't have up to date, and I know, Kimberly, you're going to be talking about the keeping your ID up to date for your pet's registration. But one of the things that is a good idea when you're travelling, if you get one of those the key rings that you put on your keys, the plastic, and you can write on the paper as a temporary, I'm travelling, this is my address. Because so many times people open the car door when they stop to have, a stop, or they stop to have a look at something along the way, sightseeing. And if you let your dog out and it gets spooked for whatever reason, it will take off. Now, most people will run after their dog, but when you run after your dog, the usual thing that happens, the dog thinks, oh, that's great, I'm heading north and you're running after me, so I'm the leader, let's keep going. And then they can get lost, you can misplace your pet. So having that tag, if somebody comes along after your pet, they'll go, oh, this dog is travelling, they'll take it to the local vet and get it scanned, and hopefully you can be reunited quickly. The other thing is, when you do stop, make sure that your dog is travelling safely in the car in the first place, whether it be in its carrier or if it's on its seatbelt. But when you open the door, do not let the pet out until you have attached the lead to the collar or the harness. Now, this is often something people don't think about, but often when the dog first gets out of the car, there's those smells, there's different things happening, and the dog will take off. And that's where the gingerbread man comes in, because, run as fast as you can. That's what the little puppy will do or the dog will do. The other thing is food. Now, when you do have a dog at home, ask people that are visiting not to feed your dog, because this is a number one. Everyone wants to love, or wants the dog to love them, right? And so sometimes people go about it in a strange way. They'll give little tidbits without anybody knowing, passing it across to the dog. But for some dogs, that can be really bad. You know, if they're giving them really rich food, they're going to end up with an upset tummy and, you know, very uncomfortable for a few days. And also, you know, sometimes you might have to tell a little fib, say it's on a special diet or whatever, just to prevent people from doing it. Because I know I've had that situation happen with Avalon. Somebody gave him some chicken thinking it was okay. You know, in the next 4 days, he had diarrhea. So we just don't allow anyone to give our dogs anything. But sometimes, too, the food that people give, you know, they don't think about that, you know, the piece of fruitcake that they've dropped is full of sultanas and may have macadamia nuts. There's so many dangerous things that are around at Christmas time.
Chocolate.
Yeah, they're all fine for us. And that's why, people just don't realise that, oh, the dog shouldn't have that.
Yeah.
And again, you know, ham and pork, they are so fatty. Mm. And, you know, the dogs will get pancreatitis. And, Kimberly, that's a really bad thing for puppies.
Oh, it's horrible. Mm. And it can, I mean, dogs can die from pancreatitis. Most don't. But, you know, they can spend days in hospital vomiting their guts up and requiring fluids. And it's very painful. And it's just, it's really unnecessary in most cases. So.
Yeah. Mm. And the other thing too, don't feel, oh, I've got a bone here, I'll give the dog the bone. Yeah. Because again, we're going to end up, you know, possibly at the vets and spending a lot of money when you don't need to at Christmas time. So avoiding the bones. The other thing is skewers, the wooden skewers that are so popular. They are just so dangerous. Mm. Yeah. And, you know, the dog doesn't understand not to eat that skewer, and then they can pierce and do dreadful things to the dog. Oh, again, another thing is, you know, the strings that are wrapped around your roast, they are ingested by lots of dogs. And
really?
Unfortunately, and you know how they sort of elasticize? Mm-hmm. When the dog ingests them, they are going through that intestinal wall, and I don't know what really happens inside.
They can put a lot of pressure on. If you can imagine, you can imagine pulling a string tight and then rubbing it across your tongue, and it can cut through the soft tissues of the intestines. It can be really, really bad. The other thing I would say is the soaker pads that, you know, are under chicken breasts or turkey roasts or, you know, those sorts of things that soak up all those. Can you imagine how good the dog thinks that is? But they often have those crystals that can swell and absorb with fluid, and they can, if the dog eats that, a little dog in particular, they can swell in the intestinal tract and cause blockages. And those are quite hard to get out. They sort of disintegrate. So we can't even go down with an endoscope and forceps and pull them out very easily because they tend to fall apart. So, Christmas hazards are many many Christmas hazards.
It's for such a long period of time. It's not just Christmas Day. As many people celebrate, you know, from now right through until the New Year period when family and friends are coming and going. So it's a long period of time. And as I said, dogs are opportunists. If you're leaving something on the kitchen bench or the table, don't be surprised if it's not there if you're not watching your dog, because so many dogs counter surf and suddenly there's something nice there. You're busy with your friends and relatives and there's nothing left because the dog's devoured it. So it's a really, just an important time to be aware of what your dog or cat is doing, and just to make life a lot safer.
And they're quick.
Oh, very quick.
Very quick. Yeah.
You know, the other thing is bonbons. They're a lot of fun and everyone gets excited and they make bangs, and that can freak some dogs out. So, you know, just be really mindful, but still have a Merry Christmas.
Have a Merry Christmas, but be mindful. Yeah. That's the main message, I'd say. Mm. Yeah. What about party poppers? Do they like the paper in that?
That's very dog individual. Some dogs, my dog loves to unwrap a present. She thinks it's great when we, you know, try to like encourage her to, she'll have a present to unwrap, and then she goes crazy. Once she starts, she thinks that's awesome. It's hard to say. The other thing I was going to say is just, lucky in Australia, we don't have a lot of poinsettias, but poinsettias, the plants can be toxic for cats and for dogs, and tinsel and, I'm looking at the table here, and there's all sorts of like shiny tinsel-y sort of things because they move around. Cats often really like them, but those little stringy things can get into cats' intestines and cause lots of problems as well. All these little like frilly streamers and things like that. These string foreign bodies in cats are really are bad, and at Christmas time it's really common.
Well, our cat keeps eyeing off our fiber optic Christmas tree.
Yeah,
and she's
biting
at it
electrical
all the time,
lights
and
too, right? Yeah, light. Electrical cords and all the lights and things like that. So
and that's with the house rabbits as well, because they'll go after those electrical cords on those fiber optic trees.
Try and cover them up. Okay.
Yeah.
Few hazards there, but as long as we're aware of them, that's the main thing.
Yeah, awareness.
We're going to talk about pet registries.
Yeah, so in New South Wales, so all of our dogs and cats are required to be microchipped, and that microchip number with the owner's contact details are listed on the pet registry, or they're meant to be listed on the pet registry. So the pet registry is really important because when we frequently get a stray dog brought into the clinic and we scan the microchip, and then authorized identifiers and people who are authorized can log into the secure website, and we can find the contact details of the person who is the legal owner based on the microchip, and we can contact them and help you reunite with your pet. The thing that people, it's a bit of a, like, once it's done, people tend to forget about it. And so when people are moving, or like Cheryl was saying, traveling, it's really critical that your microchip, your pet's microchip details, the registry details, are up to date so that we can contact you. Because it happens all the time that we contact people and they say, we often can't get through. Sometimes people say, I haven't had that dog for 4 years. I rehomed that dog. Oh. So it's really important that the details of the pet are changed. And legally in New South Wales, the person who is rehoming the dog, so the original owner, it's your legal responsibility to change the ownership details to the new owner. There's forms you can download for free off the pet registry website. And it's not hard to do. You have to create yourself an account with a login, and you're able to, transfer. The first time around, you'll have to claim your pet. So based on their microchip number, which you can get from your vet or any of the paperwork that you get with them, you claim your pet, and then from there on, you can sort of pass them across. The other thing that's happened is that as of the 1st of December, we've had some changes in New South Wales with regards to breeders. And even the legal definition of breeder is anybody who has a litter of puppies or kittens, even if that's accidental, or if they're just doing it as a one-off. So, you have a dog and you've delayed getting them de-sexed, and now all of a sudden there's a litter of puppies in your garage, you still have to get a breeder identification number. And the requirement is that those puppies must be microchipped before you move them on. So what we're looking for, what the goal is in New South Wales, is whole-of-life tracing. We want to be able to trace the origin of the dog, which mom, which bitch did it come from, how many puppies were in the litter, obviously, but where did this puppy then go? So puppy came from this dog, and then it went to this home, and then, hopefully it doesn't get passed around too often, but whole-of-life tracing is what the goal is, which means that as a breeder or as somebody who has a litter of puppies, there's a legal requirement for you now to get a breeder identification number. And that can be done pretty well instantly online through the pet registry. It's not hard to do. It does mean that as a veterinarian, we are no longer allowed to microchip litters of puppies without a breeder identification number. We need to have the microchip number of the bitch, of the mum. And we must have a breeder identification number, or we are not allowed to be microchipping the puppies. And that way they can be sort of traced, sort of throughout life. I think the requirement is that you have to get the breeder identification number within 14 days of finding out that your pet is pregnant, or within 7 days if you didn't realize they were pregnant and all of a sudden you're found, you've got a litter of puppies or kittens on your hand, within 7 days of the delivery of the babies. So that's the sort of legal sort of requirement. But
what happens with strays? So if you can't microchip without following, the parents, what happens with strays?
So as a one-off, if somebody said, I've found this kitten or I've found this puppy and brought them in to me, then we can still place a microchip because it's not a litter. Obviously, we can place that and it'll be put onto the registry as, microchipped as a juvenile at this age. And we're still not, nobody's microchipping puppies, at birth, anything like that. But in terms of a litter, because it's not uncommon for us to be presented with an entire litter of puppies to, people usually want to get them microchipped. You're legally required to get the microchip before they pass them on, but usually they want to get their first vaccinations done and often a health check. So we can't actually do that now without the breeder identification number. If you're just bringing me a one-off puppy or kitten, it's a bit of a different situation. So we can still microchip those.
Right.
Yeah.
We've got our pets of the week. We missed them last week because we were so busy with callers. So it's time we get to those. If you go to our website, 2NURFM.com.au, you can check on the lifestyle programs and you'll find Pet Chat and then our pets of the week. And we've got Mocky and Shadow, and they're both beautiful. We're going to start with Mocky, the dog.
So Mocky is a one-year-old female, yes, one-year-old female Labrador Kelpie cross. She's a lovely black dog with a big pink tongue and some white markings. Says that she's faced a lot of challenges in her young life, and so she can be a little bit anxious and nervous in new situations, but with patience and reassurance, she blossoms into a really playful, affectionate dog. Says she's good with both children and other dogs, if they're patient dogs, and so they are sure she's going to become a really loving member of the family. She has basic manners, and she's house trained, but she's young. She's only just, you know, 1 year old, so she's going to need some training still. She is going to require a secure fence. She's a bit of a boisterous, active dog, so that's really good. So, yeah, if you're interested, she's de-sexed. She's in foster care down at Cold Point. So if you're looking for, you know, a new member of the family, this one might be good. So you don't miss out on the real puppy stage, but get a nice young dog who's going to be with you for many years to come. And then we've got lovely Shadow. So Shadow's a five-year-old black, mostly black with a little bit of white on his chest, domestic short-haired cat. He's a gentle boy who has a bit of a playful streak. Says he loves chasing the laser and exploring high places. He's also a big softie who enjoys napping nearby, nudging your head for scratches and quietly keeping you company. Easy to live with, curious and very affectionate. Says he was actually surrendered to the Rutherford Pound because he wanted to sleep on the newborn baby or sleep near the newborn
near,
baby.
I think, not on.
Yeah, well, but it's actually, yeah, it's a known sort of cat thing that they often like to be, and they can be a little bit of a smothering risk, even if they're not doing it, for, you know, with any nefarious various things in mind, but it can be a bit of a risk. So it says Shadow will suit most homes. Quickly become your little bestie, likes window watching, couch cuddles and resting his paws on you. He's a good eater, up to date with all his vet checks and worming. And you can take him for a 2-week trial and see how he will fit into your home. So that's a really good option to test him out, give him a bit of a try, see how you like him. You know, again, pretty young cat, but past the real kitteny stage, which is great.
Yeah, so if you want to check those out, 2nurfm.com.au is the place to go. Now, I was saying to you about the lasers, because I said, I forgot, my cat gets quite frisky, maybe a laser would be a good idea. You say, no, it's not. Why?
Yeah, so because cats can become very, they can become very focused and obsessed with laser pointers and things like that, to the point where then any little light or reflection can really get them going, get them agitated. And it's one of those things that is sort of, it's a non, it doesn't benefit the cat at all. Even though cats have, you know, quite a long of prey drive, this is an activity that they can never win. So it can lead to frustration and sometimes aggression. So you're way better off to have a toy on a string or a little soft, mousy, chucky toy that you chuck at them where they can actually run, pounce, you know, grab, and they get that fulfillment, because it can be quite frustrating for them if they're just constantly chasing the laser pointer and they never get to win that, you know, sort of
match.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
And the focus that some of these cats, you know, they become obsessive about it, which is not really something we want to encourage for them. So,
fair enough. Yeah, actually, I've got a ball thing for my cat and she loves it. It's got three balls in it and different levels.
Yep.
And she's got to try and get the ball out, or, you know, every time she pushes it, it moves.
Goes around in a circle.
So
she's
actually worked out how to take 2 levels of balls out and then she chases them around the house. So that is the best cheap present I've ever bought.
Yep.
So she's loving it. Now, in the meantime, Kerry from Raymond Terrace is on the line. Hi, Kerry. Thanks for calling.
Hello.
Now, you've got a 2-year-old dog with anxiety.
Yes, he suffers anxiety. He's on medication.
Mm-hmm.
And I have noticed since he's been on the medication that his tongue sort of hangs out to the side and he's sort of like doing a licking motion.
Mm-hmm.
It goes from one side to the other and he sort of breathing a little bit funny and he's giving like a twitching.
Okay.
And it lasts for a little while, then it stops.
Yep.
And it's mainly of a night.
Okay.
And I have noticed it a couple of times and I thought, oh, I don't know whether that's normal or not. And then obviously he's probably doing it while I'm asleep.
How long has your dog been on his anxiety meds? Is this a new prescription for him?
It's about 2 months, yeah.
Okay, so he's only really just, depending on what he's on, but, you know, presumably it's fluoxetine or something like that.
Zantic or something?
Zantic, yep. So Zactin, sorry, it'll be Zactin. So yeah. that's fluoxetine, essentially. And fluoxetine will take even up to 12 weeks, but certainly right around that 8-week mark, you know, to get up to steady state levels. How is his behavior and his anxiety? Is that improved? Are you feeling like he's coping better with the world around him?
As far as like cars just driving past and Elise going past the door and him barking at just whatever he wants to bark at,
mm-hmm.
He seems to be very more sort of like a sedated state. I've noticed his pupils are getting bigger. When I've gone out, because it was mainly because when I was going out, he was beside himself and he was digging his way out of the yard and everything.
Yeah.
He kept doing that for a couple of weeks. So I took him back to the vet anyway, because we only put him on like, I think it was 2 weeks worth of medication she gave me to start off with. When I went back, because it seemed to not be doing anything, she actually increased his medication from a half a tablet to a 3/4 of a tablet.
Okay.
So
I would say, Kerry, is that, I mean, he's pretty early on in the piece. A lot of the sedative effects will tend to, like, they'll go away, but they can take 3 months really to go away. And it might be because he's just getting up to steady state levels. It might be that is just, you may want to discuss with your vet whether or not he's still on an appropriate level. What I would do would be to try to video those episodes that he's having so that you can take that into your vet and say, this is the thing that he's doing. Is this a problem or is that, or is it just, a quirky sort of behavior. We do know that some of these drugs will affect their appetite, and occasionally we will get the occasional dog that feels a bit nauseous. So sometimes when we're talking about licking behaviors, there can be a little bit of nausea. So that's what I would do is, videotape or on your phone video a couple of the episodes and send them into your vet and ask them to have a look at them and see if there's anything going on there. And just remember that he's very early on in the piece still. So the full effect of the drug is probably just really starting to hit him now. And so it might be because we've already had an increase in the dosage range, we may need to reconsider that and adjust the dosage again for him. Okay.
All right, because I was getting to the point where I was thinking I'd have to sort of wean him off of it.
I wouldn't do it yet.
Not worth.
Yeah, I wouldn't do that yet. We usually say minimum of 6 months for most of these drugs, so.
Thank you so much, Kerry. Appreciate the call. This is Pet Chat, and we've got Kate from Wall's End on the line. Hi, Kate. Thanks for calling.
Hi.
Now, you want to know how long after applying weed killer to grass is it safe for a dog to go there?
That's right, yes.
Yeah, so this is actually pretty straightforward. It's mostly we just need to make sure that the lawn is well dried afterwards. So you can spray it on, and then once the lawn is well dried, the biggest issue with weed killers is going to be chemical burns. And so if it's wet and the dog's walking on it, they can get a chemical burn, or they can get it on their paws and then lick it off and then they can burn the mouth. So as long as they've had, it's had a period to dry, it's usually pretty good. The actual agents that affect the weeds don't tend to affect dogs or mammals, particularly much. I mean, there's a whole other issue about like whether it's carcinogenic and things like that. But in terms of direct toxicity, we really just need to make sure that it's dry. I usually try to keep the dog off, like if the next morning, if it's dewy the next morning, I try to keep my dog off the grass then until it's dry the second morning. But, realistically speaking, you should be okay as long as the weed killer has dried up. So
The only trouble is she's a little puppy. She's only 10 weeks old, and she's actually like pulling the weeds out of the garden.
She's eating them. Yeah. She's a gardener. She's a gardener herself. Yeah. It's still, as long as she's not ingesting large quantities of it, it still shouldn't be it shouldn't affect her. The sorts of chemicals that are in there don't tend to affect mammalian channels, like electrolyte channels and things like that. Same with insecticides and things like that. Usually once they're dry, they don't tend to affect our pets too much, with the exception of a few things like snail baits and stuff like that. But in terms of your typical, you know, pest spray guy, when they come through and they put stuff around the base of your kitchen floorboards and stuff like that, once that stuff is dry, it doesn't usually affect the mammalian channels. It's actually designed to affect insect channels, you know, their way that their bodies work. So the weed killers themselves, again, as long as it's dry, it shouldn't be a major drama, even if she's eating it. I would just keep a bit of an eye, if she's a real gardener, keep a bit of an eye on what her tongue and the roof of her mouth looks like, just on the very off chance that she is, you know, getting sort of red ulcerated sort of tissue there. And in that case, you'd have to stop it. But it shouldn't be a major drama.
Okay. No, that's great. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks very much.
Thanks.
Bye-bye. Thanks for your call, Kate. Appreciate it. Bye. Now, you were talking to me earlier about the fires and the problems with animals. Do you want to go into that a bit further?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, it's at the moment, it looks like it's going to be a hot summer. We're going to have some fires. Just being ready with your pets, having a think in advance for, you know, what your fire safety plan is going to be. It's another really good reason to have your pet registry details up to date, because it's possible that you may not be home, that your dog might, you know, escape your yard or escape your home if there is a fire, and we want to be able to reunite. But I think just being, you know, being prepared to be thinking about an escape plan for yourself, obviously, which includes your pets as much as possible. And that might be that you have, you know, a water bottle and a little bit of dog food or rabbit food or, you know, anything like that available in the car so that you can just go. You don't have to think about it. Keeping extra leashes on hand so that it's easy to, you know, loop a leash around the dog's neck or, you know, grab the cat and shove it into a carrier, preferably a carrier, but cardboard boxes work, you know, something to keep them safe, remembering that it's going to be really scary and high stress for everybody. So, you know, making sure we're thinking about our pets in these high, you know, fire season danger times as well.
So it's worth having, say, like a pet emergency bag.
Absolutely. Yep. I absolutely would, particularly if you live near bush, things like that. So
you want to put, medication?
Any medications that you need, 100%, a little bit of food, you know, obviously bottled water, collapsible. You can get little collapsible bowls for them, which, you know, fold up really nicely. You can often stuff them in the, you know, side pocket so you don't have to carry a plastic bowl. But in, obviously, in a pinch, like even a takeaway container works, you can pick that up wherever. So, yeah, something easy that's, you know, grab and go. And then know where everything is, right? Because if you have... if you have 10 minutes to leave your house, you want to be able to, like, where are you going to, you know, put the little bird? How, you know, where's the carrier or the cardboard box? You know, people sometimes with budgies or cockatiels, you just might need to grab them and put them into a cardboard box. So what's your plan? If you need to get out, where are you going to put your pets? How are you going to keep them contained? You know, and then just have everything sort of ready to go. So, yeah, I'd have a little bit of food for everybody, something to contain them or restrain them, and then just know where everything is, and so you can be ready to go as soon as possible.
And just quickly, some advice about, you know, with all this heat, what do we do with the pets?
Yeah, so obviously water is really, really important. Remembering that, you know, some of our small animal pets, our rabbits and our guinea pigs, have very poor tolerance to heat. So we talk to people about making sure they're always in the shade. If you know it's going to be a hot day, a 40 degree day like we had on Saturday, freeze some water bottles, put them in the carrier or in the cage with your rabbit, with your guinea pig, so that they can keep cool. Provide shade, provide lots of water, be on the lookout. Don't exercise your dog in the heat. Just don't do it. You know, it's really important. So
we don't want them to burn their paws.
We don't want them to burn their paws. We don't want them to get heat stroke.
Yeah. No, that is right. Mm. Well, thank you very much, Cheryl and Kimberly.
You.
We appreciate it. And
thank
we'll
you.
Catch you up with you, Cheryl, next week. And Kimberly,
I'll
next
see you
year.
In February. Yeah.
Thank
thanks.
You very much.
Thanks for listening to this podcast from 2NURFM at the University of Newcastle. Topics range from gardening to health, well-being, pet care, and travel. You'll find them all at 2NURFM.com.